The following message is a teaching by Dr. Jason DeRoshi, Associate Professor of Old Testament at Bethlehem College and Seminary in Minneapolis, Minnesota. More information about Jason can be found at deroshi-meyer.org.
So this brings us to the final message. If I had to say out of all of the sermons I had the privilege of preaching in Proverbs, this was my favorite one. I think it was because it was so fresh, such a new thought, and I could see how freeing this interpretation was to particularly the women in our church. And so now I'm going to unpack what Jason was alluded to from Proverbs chapter 31. And this may be new for many of you, and when there's kind of a shift in how we interpret a text that's kind of been a given for a long time, we need to take time to kind of get our bearings, okay? So that's what I want to do. I want us to help us get our bearings. You notice in the handout that has been provided that Jason graciously and thoughtfully already put the translation in there. So you see the ESV, right, Jason, in the left column, and then you see the modified ESV in the right column. We are going to use this text. What I want to do first is I want to read the ESV text, but first I want to just give you this basic introduction, okay? There's two ways that this text is generally interpreted, okay? There's two ways of coming at it, and it hangs on how you translate the key verbs, okay? I'm not going to get super technical. We're talking the difference between present tense and past tense, okay? This is really what it hangs on at the end of the day. So there's a way to translate it, like the ESV has it, in the present tense. We're going to read it all together, but focus on what I'm saying for just a moment. When we read through it, you're going to see that by reading it in the present tense, it sounds an awful lot like workaholism. It sounds like this virtuous woman that's propped up in Proverbs 31 is untouchable. That she is at a level that is as great of an ideal it is, she's impossible to imitate, really, in reality. And to get kind of more practical about how people have understood this passage, maybe some of us have understood this passage, I know I have in the past, I'm going to just illustrate it by a couple examples. So one, I remember when I was working at an inner city kids ministry, and there was a couple young ladies on summer staff with me, and I remember them saying, "We are going to go gather our food from afar." Check. Reading Proverbs 31, the Proverbs 31 woman goes to gather food from afar, and so they're saying, "Went grocery shopping. Did that today." What happens is, when you read it in the present tense, it treats it as a checklist mentality. Whereas, as you read it, it seems like this woman does all these things in one day. And therefore, as a modern woman reader, you're going to read it as, okay, not only does she does it all in one day, I need to do it all in one day. So here's the list of what she did, and let's see how we fare. And you wonder why they get depressed. Right? So we're going to see that. One more just comment on it that I think, so the young lady's example, but then also I think what can be destructive about interpreting this wrongly is that you have a whole generation of young Christian men that are told that they need to find a Proverbs 31 woman. And if we were to show them one, I can't even say it. They might be surprised by what they find. Because what you see in Proverbs 31, when you look at the an alternate perspective, a true Proverbs 31 woman is a mature, godly woman who has lived a lot of life. And she's ripe in her years. And so you would have to, he's saying, you know, Jason was telling me, you know, like he's a counseling young guy, and like, it's just like, there's no women around here like this. Like, well, There's a couple over here. Let me show you. Bring you over to the senior section. Show you, you know. But the point is that you have a whole generation of young men that are looking for a perfect woman. A woman that can do all these things and not just do them all, but do them all in one day. And it becomes impossible. These are unhelpful expectations. And men will, if they settle for less and get married, they will hold their wife, their young wife, to this standard. And I'm ashamed to say, I think I've fallen into this in some significant ways that I think I've crippled my wife in some ways, paralyzed her by having certain expectations that after seeing this passage clearly, just saying like, I'm so sorry. It's so unhelpful. And it was because I interpreted the passage wrong. And so what's at stake with the first way of taking it is that it gives the sense that this woman, this superwoman, one, she's untouchable, and it's because she can do everything in one day that you were going to read about. So I want you to, with that in mind, we're going to read the ESV as it stands. And I'd like us to, trade off, you know, verse by verse here. So can we make our way around? Can we start in the back with you, Brad, and then kind of weave our way back, listen for the guy next to you, and take up the next verse?
An excellent wife who can find, she is far more precious than jewels.
Mark of her husband, trust in her, you will have no lack of gain.
She does him good and not harm all the days of her life.
She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands.
She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar.
15.
She rises while it is yet night. Food for her household and portions for her needs.
She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard.
She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong.
She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night.
She puts her hands to the distaff and her hands hold the spindle.
She opens her hands to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy.
She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet.
She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple.
Her husband is known in the gates and sits among the elders of the land.
She makes linen garments and sells them.
Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time of coming.
She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue.
She looks well to the ways of her household, and does not eat the bread of idleness.
Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her.
Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all.
Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is praised.
Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates.
Can you guys see it? That checklist, where that checklist mentality can come from, mm-hmm. when it's translated with the present tense like that? Can I get a show of hands if you see it? Mm-hmm. Okay. This is really crucial because I want you to be able to, we're going to shift and read the other one in a moment. Let me give a couple introductory thoughts. So I think there's a better way to translate the verbs, and that's to translate them in the past tense. And the shift goes from this. Instead of her doing everything in one day, it's recounting what she's done over a lifetime. This is huge. It changes everything about this passage. Instead of it's something she does in a day, it's something that she does over a lifetime. She's still an ideal, but the difference is that she's much more possible to imitate. Thus, I believe that if we understand it in this way, we're going to avoid the checklist mentality in our people. And and what we're going to see is that what she's doing is she's not operating under a checklist. What we're seeing is a woman of God who is faithful in every season of life. taking seasons as they come and being faithful in what a given season demands. Faithfulness is what we're seeing. And that's one of the crowning virtues over all of what we're going to see of the Proverbs 31 woman. So instead of these young ladies saying, I go gather my food from afar, check, they're going to be saying, I want to become this kind of woman. There are seeds here, and I want to grow. Go ahead, brother.
I just don't understand. Is this the way it was written in the original text? It was really supposed to be past tense and not present?
I can explain it, but I'd rather you do it because okay. You could
and
probably do a better job. So at bottom, it can be translated either way. So context is going to tell at the end of the day. So do you want to build on that?
different types of verbs in Hebrew. And when you get out, so this is poetry, and when you get outside of poetry, scholars are fully unified that when you see, I'll name two of them, a katal or a vayiktol. Or a perfect, sometimes they're called, and a vav consecutive. When you see these in a story, you just naturally translate them as past. Then there's another verb called the imperfect or the yiktol. And that is often how you would translate the present. So perfective action is action that is portrayed as complete. It has a beginning, it has an end, the whole is being portrayed. Whereas imperfective action is action where you don't see the beginning and the end, it's just happening. It's in process. Now, you can use the yiktol to not just translate the present or the future, it can actually be translated in the past when what you're talking about in the past is habitual action that's happening in recurring fashion. Now, what the translators have done is if you look in the right column, there are five yiktol verbs. All of them are underlined on the right-hand column. But there are 19 verbs that are usually translated in past tense outside of poetry. There isn't a context where outside of poetry you would take these past tense verbs and actually translate them in the present.
So one thing you're saying right now is that to translate them in the past tense is more consistent.
To translate them in the past tense is more consistent. And then you say, is there a way that the imperfective verb, the yiktol, can be in past time? And even in stories, we see it in past time to focus on actions that are always happening. And what's intriguing is that each of the times that we see this... So what the ESV translator has done is said... It has chosen the five to be the dominant time rather than the 19 to identify the dominant time. And I think that, and it's growing out of a sense that wisdom can only be expressed in present time. That's how we talk about wisdom. But I don't think that's true. I think often we can, some of the proverbs that I gave were not only listed in present time, that they could be listed in past time. A stitch in time saves nine. But you could equally say, so that's just present time, but you could equally say a stitch in time has saved nine. And you're reflecting on what has just been accomplished. But it's now been put in the past time, and wisdom can still be portrayed that way. And I want to, what I'm suggesting, and I'm building off of another mm-hmm. who made this proposal, who's a Proverbs guy, and when I read it, I said, yes, this is right, because all of a sudden you're not being inconsistent with how Hebrew works. You're actually letting what you know to be true in the narrative, how you use the verbs there, be consistent through the wisdom. And when you do, if you look at each of the... underlined words, what you see is they can all be, they're all expressing habitual recurring activity. She had no lack of gain. Not just in a moment, but it was some, that was just the characteristic of her life. It was progressive. She would bring her food from afar. Not that she did it in one moment, but it's using this particular verb, which is often present or future, but can be translated in the past when it's referring to actions that happened over and over again. And that's exactly when they chose to use the verb, they were only doing it for activities that happened in process. Her lamp did not go out at night, meaning that it stayed on. It's just focused on the duration. She was not afraid. It was a context. Her state just continued of fearlessness. So that's so I'm allowing the 19 verbs that are almost always translated as past time to be the dominant interpretive grid, and then saying when yiktol shows up in past time contexts, when this imperfective verb shows up in past time context, then what do? We translate it as a pastime habitual action. And so that's how I've done it here. And now I'll let the sermon continue.
Yeah, so just let me summarize it real quick to bring it together. So, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying, you know, the way the verbs are used outside of wisdom literature, like if we're going to be consistent, the translating of past tense would be the most consistent way to use the verbs in the Old Testament. And then when you get into the context itself, the majority of the verbs in there are this habitual past. And so he's saying, are to be translated past tense. And if you do that, then you just have to ask the question, does this best account for the overall context? And that's where, honestly, the argument got most persuasive to me. I read the article that Jason talked about. It was very persuasive. But what persuaded me at the end of the day is when you weigh these two out in the context, and just say which one seems to hang together better. I thought that the past tense hung together better, so it was helpful thinking in terms of habitual past. So, go ahead if you have another question.
I'm assuming that because you didn't reference the NASB, that the NASB follows the ESV or vice versa.
Yeah, all major translations follow that basic present tense translation. So, does that clear enough where we can move forward? So I know I don't want you to... Go ahead.
Well, I understood a certain amount of your oration, but I'm still having a hard time connecting where the perception of this happened within a 24-hour period. You made a reference to that. As I look here, she plants a vineyard. Now I can't perceive that a woman would do that every day. But mm-hmm. Kind of encompassed it that this should be a checklist for, or perceived as a checklist for 24 hours. I don't see that.
Well... just it being in the present, like it's happening in present time. So we're not getting a real good, like there's not like a shift in time, like in the text. And so as you just keep reading, you go from the next present tense verb to the next present tense verb, the next present tense verb, and they just kind of build on each other. And you realize, when did these things happen? And since it's not a completed time, like a past tense, then you're kind of left saying, well, she seemed to do it more or less in a day. You know, I'm kind of being... It doesn't. I'm not locking her in at a 24-hour period. I'm just simply saying that she seems to be able to do a lot at one time.
She never gets to rest.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing about rest in here. There's, you know, so maybe that's not as helpful. That's just helpful for me just to get a category in my mind. But if it's too literal, just broaden it to say that she does a lot, you know, in a short amount of time.
So it's more like at least a weekly planner than a lifetime achiever.
Go with that then, if that's helpful. Go with that. Okay. So the shift happens where when you go from translate from past tense or present tense to past tense, you go from more of a checklist mentality to something that happens over a lifetime. It's a lifetime achievement. So the young ladies that were quick to do the checklist thing, they're gonna just broaden their whole scope of how they think about what God's wanting to do in their lives. Instead of seeing here a young wife that it's just this mature, incredible woman. We're seeing a woman who has walked with God for a long time through a lot of seasons of life. And she's beautiful. She's virtuous. And it's come from slow and steady faithfulness at each season of life. And instead of a young man trying to find that perfect young woman, he's going to realize, it takes time for such a woman to come about. But I will look for such a woman in whom I see the seeds of true virtue. So I'm going to see the seeds of virtue in this woman here, and then a young man, and this is huge for counseling, brothers, when you're saying, a young guy not that long ago was asking me about whether or not he should pursue this girl. He's like, I don't know. I mean, there seems to be a level of godliness, but I'm just really struggling. And one way I counsel them without giving him some definitive answer is to say, do you see the seeds of true virtue in her? I unpacked this text that we're going to cover right now, and I said, do you see the seeds? Like, are there buds there? Like, is there something starting to develop in her life that you could see through the eyes of faith, a trajectory where that's going to come into full flower later on? And that's the beauty of it. That's the difference at the end of the day between interpreting it in terms of present tense or past tense. This is either a short duration of time or this is over a lifetime. This is a lifetime achievement. And so I'm arguing that it is a lifetime achievement is what this text is portraying here. Now, I'll just going to read my notes here. So instead of describing what she does in a day, it speaks about what she did or used to do over her lifetime. These were the types of things that characterized her life. It's not even exhaustive, you know. It's, a godly woman could conceivably do things that are not on this list, and still be a virtuous woman. But the point is that these are the types of things that characterized her life. She did what a given season demanded. When a new season of life came with its unique demands, she rose to the occasion. In a word, she was faithful. Okay, so let's read together now the modified ESV. Where do we leave off before? Anybody remember? Okay.
She sought wool and flax and worked with willing hands.
She was like the ships of the merchant. She would bring the food from afar.
She rose while it was yet night and provided food for her household and portions for her maidens.
She considered a field and bought it. With the fruit of her hands, she planted a vineyard.
She dressed herself with strength and made her own stride.
She perceived that her merchandise was profitable. Her lamp did not go out of print.
She put her hands to the staff, and her hands held the spindle.
She opened her hand to the poor and reached out her hands to the needy.
Household was clothed in scarlet.
She made bed coverings for herself. Her clothing was fine linen and purple.
Her husband was, is, known in the gates, in his sitting among the elders of her land.
She made linen garments and sold them. She delivered sashes to the merchant.
Strength and dignity were her clothing, and she laughed at the time to come.
She opened her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness was on her tongue.
She looked well to the ways of her household and did not eat the bread of idols.
Her children rose up and held her glass of her children also. Her husband also, and he praised her.
Many women have done excellently, but you have surpassed them all.
Charm is deceitful.
Give her the food of her hands. Let her works may praise her in the gates.
Okay. Thanks, brothers. Does it help reading that in the past tense? Can you see a little more how that seems like a habitual thing, like how she lived throughout a life? Can you see that more clearly? I mean, even if you're just seeing it a little bit more clearly, I'm going to exposit the whole text now, so I think that's going to help a lot. But I just wanted to give you at least enough time before we dove in to at least kind of get your bearings, right? If it's pretty new for you, if not brand new. So if You've got your bearings. How many of you guys read biographies? Biographies are wonderful. They're wonderful. And you've probably, those of you who read biographies, these stories about people's lives, especially spiritual heroes, missionaries, pastors, you know, we love those. They're food for us, right, in the trenches. But one thing you realize pretty quick as you read these is that biographies have kind of dual effects, right? They on those who read them, we can feel crushed and we can feel inspired. That's what biographies do to us when we read them. Like, on the one hand, we feel crushed because we look at the character. I read about Charles Spurgeon, you know, and I just think, God, I'm so inspired. This is incredible. But then I just feel crushed under the weight of his example, how he gave himself to the ministry of the gospel. And I'm sure you could point at, you know, people that you've read in biographies, similar thing, you know. Think of just the zeal of people, you know. It could be their godliness, their integrity. You know, in other words, you start reading about their character and it ratchets up an ideal in your mind. And it's awesome because it inspires you to want to go further up and further in your walk with God, right? But it also crushes you because you feel like, I'm not there yet and I've got a ways to go. So it has that dual effect of biographies. Well, Proverbs 31 is like a biography of an incredible woman. It crushes and it inspires. It crushes and it inspires. So for the remainder of this message, what we're going to do, I'm not trying to be cute. I'm not trying to be overly creative, but I felt, you know, the Lord would have me present it, this text, to my people in this way because I want it to be understandable. And I trust that it'll be edifying for you, brothers. So what we're going to do is for the whole rest of the sermon, we're going to actually kind of enter into a drama, okay, where we're going to have a ceremony for a godly woman, okay? And you can picture a godly woman in your church who's run her course, you know. And but we're going to call her Sophia, okay? Sophia's the godly woman that we're going to hold a ceremony in her honor. I'm going to be the pastor that helps, you know, officiate, facilitate this occasion. And I just want you to enter into the drama, okay? You're going to be crushed, probably less so since you're men. If you're women, would be more crushed, but crushed and inspired. And we're going to see how even this word about a virtuous woman has much bearing on our souls. And so we will dive in. Be crushed, be inspired. As we open our ceremony, I want to give a justification for why we're going to do the whole part one of the ceremony, okay? If you look at verse 31, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to refer to verses throughout. So if I just say verse 31, I leave it hanging, I need someone to read it for me, okay? Out loud to engage you guys. So verse 31. So what we're going to do with Sophia now, we're going to actually let her works praise her in this public sphere. We're going to let her works be known, the works that she's lived throughout her life, and we're just going to celebrate this life of faithfulness. So we're going to let her works do the talking. Okay, so I want to start by celebrating her works. And verses 31 through 27 unpack these for us. So, verse 13.
She sought wool and flax and worked with willing hands.
Sophia enjoyed her work and diligently gathered her necessary supplies. Before she exercised her skill on the spindle, she would happily gather wool and flax. I'm not sure what's more amazing, that she faithfully gathered these materials without ever uttering a complaint, or that she actually made the beautiful things that she did out of such materials. Verse 14.
She was like the ships of the merchant. She would bring her food from afar.
Sophia never ceased to surprise her family when she came home with food. One could compare her with a ship filled with foreign delicacies sailing for home. Her business transactions also provided opportunities for her to secure delicacies, types of foods that most families didn't get to experience. They never fell on their taste buds, but there were many happy taste buds around her table. Verse 15. You know, there were seasons when Sophia would get up while it was still dark out, well before her family and her servants were awake, in order to make preparations for the day. This is just another example of how she always seemed to put the well-being of her household before her own comfort. Sophia has left a legacy of selflessness and sacrifice. Verse 16.
A field and water. With the fruit of her hand, she planted a vineyard.
Sophia made wise and prudent financial decisions. For example, take the time that she purchased a field. She first pondered the potential of the field, scouting it from every angle. Then she purchased it. And having purchased such a quality field, she diligently cultivated it by planting a vineyard. And we all know how much work those are. She had to dig up the ground, remove all the stones, plant the vines, then build a watchtower, not to mention hewing out a wine press. What a woman. Verse 17.
She dressed herself with strength and made her arms strong.
Sophia was known for her spiritual and physical strength. She continually came at her work with determination, a posture of spiritual and mental readiness. She clothed herself with strength, as it were, always readying herself for hard work. There was not a task that she was not spiritually and physically prepared to meet, competent to execute. Verse 18. And boy, did Sophia know how to put her strength to work. She had a very sharp mind for business. Not only was she quick to recognize the value of her merchandise, but she also sought diligently to capitalize on it by making more. Yes, she knew how to strike when the iron was hot. Even staying up late into the night for a season in order to mass produce the product. Verse 19. And we all know what Sophia's bread and butter was. How she put her hands to the distaff. Yes, she loved that spindle and could spin and weave the most beautiful fabrics and garments I've ever seen. She had a gift, and she perfected that gift. Verse 20.
She opened her hand to the poor and reached out her hands to the needy.
It wasn't enough for her to merely work hard with her hands for the sake of her family. Sophia worked hard so she could extend those same hands to meet the needs of the poor. As a big-hearted woman, she loved to work hard so that she could give generously. God only knows how many hungry stomachs were satisfied by her kindness. Verse 21.
She was not afraid of snow for her household.
Oh, and was she ever fearless. When others fretted because the weather was getting ugly and cold snaps were drawing near, she didn't bat an eye. The falling snow and freezing weather didn't faze her because she had already diligently provided for her family, seeing to it that they were dressed in warm and costly clothing. Verse 22. Not only didn't she see to it that her family was dressed well, she herself dressed beautifully. She made her own clothes, quality clothing, not to mention her own bedding. As beautiful as she was dressed, she never seemed to dress in a way that drew attention to herself. She was beautiful, yet dignified. Verse 23.
Her husband was known in the city gates.
in his sitting among the elders of the land.
Her husband was a well-respected man, having a good reputation, even taking his seat among the elders. Yet he'd be the first to say that his wife was a huge factor in his own success. He enjoys the blessing of honor among men because his wife is a gem among women. Behind this noble man is a virtuous woman. He's well aware of this and will speak for himself in a few minutes. Verse 24.
She made linen garments and sold them. She delivered sashes to the men.
Did I say that she had a gift? She was always improving and exercising her skill by making quality garments. She didn't just make them, she sold them. That is, she prudently made a profit by producing and selling a valuable product. I guess what I'm trying to say is that Sophia is a woman of great character. This is how I would summarize her character in three words. Strength, wisdom, and diligence. If I had to boil it all down, looking at her character, everything we've just recalled and letting her works praise her, we could boil it down to strength, wisdom, and diligence. Verse 25.
Strength and dignity were in her clothing, and she laughed at the time to come.
Strength. Sophia had lived such a dignified life that it is virtually impossible not to respect her. Here she sits, an old woman with a well-worn body and a happy soul. Sophia's strength helped anchor her family through many of life's storms and gave them hope and confidence no matter what tomorrow would bring. Rumors of bad news could swallow up tomorrow's light like a dark cloud, but her heart, unmoved. Hers was a strength that could laugh at the time to come. Verse 26.
She opened her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of her kindness was on her tongue.
Wisdom. No one wondered what was in Sophia's heart, for from the overflow of her heart came words of kindness. The kind that heal those who are broken and refresh those who are weary. The kind that strengthen those who are fearful and comfort those who are suffering. Her words were timely, instructive, composed, purposeful, edifying. Here sits a woman of wisdom. A woman whose words and lifestyle always seem to match up. Verse 27.
She looked well to the ways of her household and did not eat the bread of idleness.
Diligence. Sophia is known as a subduer of time. If time was a wet towel, then Sophia wrung out every last drop in service to others, especially for those in her family. In fact, we could say that her home was her hub for ministry. She had an intense homeward orientation. Virtually everything she did was strategically positioned to bless her husband and children in some way. Her time was well spent. Her life was well spent. We've heard her works praise her. Now it's time to hear the praise of those closest to her. Now at this point, Sophia's children and her husband make their way to the podium and step over and let her children speak and her children praise her. Verse 28, I'll read this. Verse 28, her children rose up and called her blessed. Her grown children stand to their feet. They came, the same sons that she nursed as mere babes now tower over her as men. Men with tear-filled eyes and words of profound gratitude. Her daughters quiver with joy and thanksgiving as they tell of their mother's selfless and sacrificial ways. Together they stand to honor a life well spent. Together they bless the mother who has so profoundly blessed them. And then the husband steps to the podium. Her husband also, along with the children, praises her. In the first words that he speaks, verse 29.
Many women have done excellently, but you have surpassed them all.
He says, many women have done excellently, but you, Sophia, have surpassed them all. Verse 12.
She did him good and not harm all the days of her life.
Sophia, you have done much, done me much good, so much more than I deserve. By the way that you have lived with me these many years, I have never had a reason to doubt that you were for me, that you were in my corner. Verse 11. Sophia, because of who you are, my heart has been at ease throughout our married life. Your faithfulness in every season of our lives has left no room for me to worry. You've helped me flourish. You've made me a better man. Verse 10.
An excellent wife who can find. She is far more precious than jewels.
There's about one more thought I wish to express. Sophia, you are a woman of great valor, a woman of noble virtue, a woman of breathtaking character. You are more precious to me than jewels. You are worth more than the rarest of gems. You are in a class of your own. And at this point, their husband steps back. Pastor retakes the podium, and they're going to present a really special gift to Sophia. And we're in an auditorium filled with thousands of people who have gathered for this occasion. And the pastor says to Sophia, Sophia, we want you to know that this gift that you're about to receive has come as a gift from everybody in this room. Every single person in this room has pitched in because they wanted to express the worth of your life. And so I'm going to present to you this plaque made out of pure gold. This gold is symbolic of the value of your life, a life well lived. And on the plaque, at the top, you can see these three rare gems. Each of these capturing the character that we've seen played out in your lifetime. And those three wonderful virtues are strength, wisdom, and diligence. And at the heart of the plaque, there's a quote. And it's inlaid in silver. It's engraved in silver. And the reason for that is because we want everybody to know what we know, and that's that we want them to know the source of such a life, the source of such virtue. And so he reads the description. Verse 30, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she is to be praised. And the pastor takes another moment to explain the source of her character. The fear of the Lord. Sophia, you walked in the fear of the Lord. That is, you submitted your will to God's will. You bent your mind and heart around what God has said in His Word. You have honored Him with your life. Sophia, you have sown honorably. Now you reap honor. And with those words, everybody in the auditorium stood with a standing ovation that some people say is still continuing to this day. This was a moment to honor a life well lived. A life that found its roots in the fear of the Lord. Every drop of virtue that we read about in the Proverbs 31 woman came out of the fear of the Lord, a heart that was surrendered to the Word of God. And you see the type of fruit that comes out of such a life. And we celebrated it in that. And now I want to close with drawing your attention to the gospel. How does the gospel relate to such a text as this? We're celebrating a woman's life, her life, the virtuous life of a godly woman. So this is the word that I primarily directed at women in our church, but I believe it's applicable for all of us. So how do we respond to reading such a biography? When we look at that kind of life, how should our hearts respond to that type of thing? Well, we should be crushed. And we should be inspired. Look at that example and be crushed, brothers, by your failures to walk in the fear of the Lord. Be humbled by your own imperfections and lack of godly virtue. Be cut down to size by beholding the picture of dignity and faithfulness. Be reminded that you have nothing good in you apart from Christ, and apart from Christ, you have no true virtue. Once you are emptied, and I'm emptied, and we are emptied of our self-righteousness, then we're at a place where we can be inspired. Be inspired by the fact that you have put your faith in Jesus Christ and in Him alone. And when you have done that, then it is not your virtue with which you clothe yourself to look attractive before God. It's not your willingness to work hard or your ability to say wise things that earns you points with your Maker. It's not your generosity or your creativity or your industriousness or your organization skills or your efficiency that gives you favor with God. It is not your children's approval or your spouse's praise that gives you your worth. No, we must look away from ourselves. Look away from ourselves. And at once realize that behind every virtuous woman stands the same virtuous man, the God-man, Jesus Christ. He lived the virtuous life that no one, no man nor woman before or since has lived. His most virtuous moment was when he died for a people utterly devoid of true virtue. On the cross, our filthy garments clothed the most dignified person the world has ever known. Let that settle on us. On the cross, our filthy garments clothed the most dignified person this world has ever known. Our garments of failure and sin, our garments of indignity and shame, our wasted moments and squandered potential, these were the garments that swaddled our Savior on the cross. Look at Him afresh and realize that it is by faith, by trusting Him, that we are clothed for the very first time with true virtue. It's by wearing the virtue of another that makes us attractive to God. It's not only by forsaking your old garments, but by adorning yourself with the virtue of Jesus Christ that you are found attractive before God. On the cross, God takes our lack of virtue and He places it on His Son. And in that same moment, He takes all the virtue that's found in the eternal Son of God and He credits it to our account. It's a glorious thing, so much so that for the first time, God looks at us and He just sees virtue. He sees glory. He sees beauty. He sees diligence. He sees strength. He sees wisdom. He sees a person that's willing to do whatever it takes, whatever the season demands, because they're walking in the fear of the Lord. God sees these things by virtue of our connection to Jesus Christ. Be inspired by the fact that you know where true virtue comes from. And the more you behold the virtue of Christ, the more virtuous you become. The more you behold the virtue of Jesus Christ, the more virtuous you become. It's not about checklists. It's about the faithful beholding of true virtue in the person of Jesus Christ over a lifetime. That's where virtue is born. Beholding Jesus Christ and all of his virtue over a lifetime. If you look at yourself all day long, day after day, you will either become self-obsessed or depressed. But if you spend your days beholding Christ, you will become a person of great virtue. That's how it happens, by design. You become like what you behold. We become like what we worship. This life can be a life of ever-increasing virtue. When you behold Christ and live by the power of the Holy Spirit, you can become a person marked with strength, with wisdom, and with diligence that flows out of a heart that fears the Lord. And when you sow honorably, you will reap honor. Amen. Amen. I have a list of application questions. I just want to read quickly. And this is designed specifically for women. I just want you to hear these kinds of things because these are the types of things that grow out of this kind of understanding of this text. So, here are some questions that women can ask of their own hearts. Do you value the right things? Godly character, or do you value cultural values? Do you have a whatever it takes attitude, a willingness to work hard? What does faithfulness require in this season of your life? Is this a season that would demand that you rise early or go late to rest? Faithfulness looks different for young women or older women. Just keep that in mind. You know, what faithfulness is going to look like for my wife is different than what it should look like for a seasoned woman of God in my church. And I shouldn't have the same expectations of both. It's going to look different. What does faithfulness look like when we have two little children at home, you know, compared to when you're an empty nester and God has freed you up to spend your time differently? How do you discern what a given season demands? If you're a married woman, do you have a homeward orientation? That is your home your primary platform for ministry? Or do you neglect your home in order to do greater things? That's not virtuous. That's what we want our women to know. What makes a woman truly beautiful, truly valuable, truly praiseworthy? What is the common denominator between the real man and the virtuous woman? I preached those two sermons back to back. Biblical manhood according to the Proverbs and then biblical womanhood according to the Proverbs. So I asked the question, what's the common denominator between the real man and the virtuous woman? Fear of the Lord. Are you walking in the fear of the Lord? Are you remembering where true virtue comes from? And beautifully, that Sunday, we actually got to partake of the Lord's Supper after that, and it was fitting to just think about what Christ did in terms of clothing us with true virtue.
Thank you for listening to this message from the ministry of Dr. Jason DeRoshi, Associate Professor of Old Testament at Bethlehem College and Seminary in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for these copies or alter their content in any way without written permission from Jason DeRoshi. For more information on Bethlehem College and Seminary, we invite you to visit online at bcsmn.org. For more information on Dr. DeRoshi, visit online at deroshi-meyer.org. Proclaiming the kingdom and treasuring a God who rules, saves, and satisfies through covenant for his glory in Christ.